welcome to a new episode of 49ers Talk on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your hosts, 49ers insider Matt Maiocco and 49ers host Laura Britt.
This is 49ers Talk brought to you by Big O Tires. Laura, you know how we ended the last podcast? Like, the 49ers had just finished their preseason game against the Chargers, and you were like, I am so ready to start this season.
Yes.
That still stands. That was genuine, wasn't it?
It really was. I think I've seen people more invested in the preseason this year.
I wonder why.
Well, I mean, there's obvious reasons why, but you combine the Trey Lance, Jimmy Garoppolo situation with COVID, with not being able to see your team in person, with a year of just absolute mayhem for all of us. And I think that's why that, on top of Jimmy G and Trey Lance, that's why there's so much excitement. And it's just, it really is an exciting time to, it almost feels like, I know everybody says it feels like Christmas Day, but it does this year. It really does. I mean, it's a long season and they've added a game. So it's just going to be, it's going to be a fun season. And I'm really pumped. I want the regular season. I want this preseason mess over with. I'm ready to get to the games.
Well, we can pump the brakes now. There's still one more week of practice.
I know. I don't want it.
A few more practices and all this. But, you know, I just wonder, you know, being around the 49ers and you're talking about the enthusiasm, I wonder if, like, Parag Marathe writes it into the contracts of these players that they have to talk about how great the locker room is and how much they enjoy being there and how it's so different than other places, because everybody says it. And, you know, it was Zach Kerr after the game. It's Travis Benjamin. It's on and on and on. It's Arden Key and Maurice Hurst and all these guys who have come to the team from other teams, Samson Ebukam. They've all talked about the culture with the 49ers. And I think that almost kind of permeates to the fan base. And I think that's part of it, right? I mean, it's part of why there is such anticipation looking forward to the season, because I just kind of get the sense that everybody's looking forward to this season because, in part, you know, last year went just so horribly wrong that...
Yeah, I didn't even mention all the injuries last year. I mean, that's a big part of so much excitement this year, too.
Yeah, the return of Nick Bosa, potentially D Ford, two guys who look really good, and one guy in particular who nobody was really expecting much of anything from just because of the uncertain nature of that injury. But, yeah, there's so much to talk about. Oh, and by the way, yeah, you talked about why this preseason is kind of, you know, one that everybody is really looking forward to and enjoying. Trey Lance, yeah, and a little bit later, we'll be having part three of The Choice, Trey Lance, presented by Toyota. And this is a fun one because, well, they're all kind of fun. But this one is looking at his childhood. And I'm not going to give it away because you're going to have to stick to the end to listen to this episode. But we tracked down somebody who plays a very prominent role in Trey Lance's determination to be an NFL player, and someone I was not sure this person would want to be interviewed. And turns out that person was a little bit reluctant, but decided it's a fun story. So I'll sit down and talk to you. So now it doesn't.
Now I really want to listen to it.
Yeah, no, it's a lot.
Do you have a favorite part? I know we haven't gotten through all four releases of The Choice. Did you have a favorite part in learning about Trey Lance?
Well, they're all very unique and different. I mean, it's basically four different stories about this kid. He's a kid, right? He's 21 years old.
Same age as us.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I've been that age for, about 30 years, I think. A little bit more than that. So anyway, every story that we tell is a little bit different. This is probably the most fun because we can all relate. You know, we can all relate to being a child with a dream. And very few times, like, I never hit the walk-off home run in the bottom of the ninth inning in game 7 of the World Series. Never made it even close to that. I don't think I even did that in like wiffle ball. But we've all had dreams, and to hear what Trey Lance's dream was from a very early age, and then his parents, Angie and Carlton, are phenomenal, and kind of how they supported him, didn't push him to the point of like burning him out, but kind of gave him a nudge, gave him support. But ultimately, I mean, it's all on him, right? It's all on the kid growing up, because as much as parents might want something to happen for their child, it doesn't happen unless the child wants it. And then I think there was a point where Trey's determination to get to this level, like way far and away superseded anything a parent can do. So it's kind of fun, just because, you know, you and I are parents, and I think parents kind of wrestle with that whole idea of, you know, what is support? How much do you kind of nudge, push? How much do you lead your child in the direction? But ultimately, it's up to the individual to determine what he or she wants to do in life.
Well, and don't sell yourself short. We're living out our dreams.
We are.
And how cool is it that we get to come on every week and talk about the 49ers? And I know that that was something that crossing over into the TV world. Welcome into my world, Matt Miyoko. You've been here for a while now, out of the writing world. But it is something that's relatable. Everybody's got a dream when they're younger, no matter if it's to be a professional athlete or, you know, do what we do, or go out and be an engineer or something other, you know, a doctor. So it's fun. It's fun to think back, and you kind of put yourself in those moments.
Yeah. And you know what? I just had a dream that we were joined by someone notable, very notable, on 49.
Oh, right now?
Well, I think someone's trying to get into our Zoom room.
Don't we have this password protected?
I think we do, but it looks like somebody just kind of popped in here almost unannounced.
What? Is that Joe Staley?
Oh, oh, it's me, Joe.
What?
What's happening right now?
Hold on, that
we had a password on this, Joe. We have a password protection.
Hold on, is that really Joe Staley? It looks like somebody who kind of looks like Joe Staley, but maybe not quite as big as the left tackle I remember.
Yeah, that guy was a little bit overbloated, was feeding himself a little too much, a little too frequently. And now that I'm not doing that anymore, the weight just kind of fell off. And here I am.
Well, Joe...
Found myself into a random Zoom. What is this?
Yeah, I don't know. But hey, can I say this?
We don't even know what we're doing here.
Go, you look great. You absolutely look great.
Thanks, Matt. You look amazing as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I haven't changed.
You as well, Laura. Everybody,
oh, thanks. Amazing. I appreciate everybody that. You can tack me on the end. That's fine.
Everybody's happy to be here. We're all complimenting each other on each other's looks. And now we can continue.
Okay. Yeah. Now it just kind of got awkward with me saying that, huh?
That happens a lot, by the way, Joe. That happens a lot.
What do we owe this honor to? You're joining me and Laura on 49ers Talk?
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't know if I was going to be the one that was going to break this, or if you guys were going to be the one that was going to break this. But there is some news to share, and I do feel like we will be seeing much more of each other in the coming future. So let's just go ahead and talk about the elephant that's in my room and not about the weight that was lost. So I will be joining you guys this season for 49ers pregame and postgame live throughout the 2021 season. And I am fired up.
Wow. Oh, we're so excited. Do we tell him now that we're not as cool as George Kittle and
Michael Glenshi? He'll figure that out.
Okay.
I mean, trust me. That's not hard to do. Those guys, it's all perception. They are not nearly as cool as everybody thinks they are.
Wow. So, Joe, you retired, obviously, on draft day, at least announced it on draft day of 2020. I expected you to just be – I didn't expect you to just kind of go into the background like you did for one full season. So why did you decide to do it the way you did? and why now are you like, okay, I'm ready to do this?
Well, I thought I was going to be in the background forever, and then spent one season away from football and realized I really like football. Maybe I really enjoyed that thing that I spent the last 20 years of my life competing and spending every free moment of my time doing and thinking about. And I need to get back into it. I need to be around the game. And so that 1 year was fun, but I was also driving my wife, my kids, myself nuts. And I just need to be back around the game. And the coaching thing is a little bit intense right now. Maybe that's for a future endeavor, but I just need to be around the game. This is a great avenue to do that. Continue to watch film, talk to the guys, be connected to the game, and be connected to the 49ers, which is the team, the only team that I care for and want to cheer on. So I'm fired up.
Well, welcome to the team. We're really excited to have you too. This is going to be really fun. With that, what attracted you to the TV side of things? You obviously, 49ers fans love you for your personality, and you've, that's not something you've ever shied away from. You've always really been yourself. But what about the TV world excites you?
For me personally, I think I can offer a lot, not just because there's a lot of people that are out there that are kind of breaking down what happened with the play. You can kind of see, you know, everybody with eyes can see like, oh, this is a successful play, this is not a successful play. But I have a pretty good insight of like the anatomy of a play and like why a certain play is successful. And that's something that as an offensive lineman, especially, I always wanted someone that understood and could speak to the fans about why this certain thing's successful. Yeah, we can all see the quarterback and the running back break a big play, but you know, why was it that way? It's a lot of times is for the work that was done up front. And so just to have an offensive line's perspective, I think is exciting. It will be exciting for the players. Just a real, what's the word I'm searching
inside
for?
Scoop. Let's be real.
Inside scoop, but it's also, you know, just a brother in arms in the media side for those offensive linemen that get just crapped on all the time.
You're on the dark side now, Joe. Welcome to the dark side.
I'm finally happy to be able to be a conduit for those guys to really gravitate and link on and be like, hey, we got a guy like Joe who can just have our back.
You know who's
not. For real, like honestly, I'm just excited to be, like I said, connected to the game, but I always enjoyed the interaction between the player and the media. And just to see the other side of it is going to be something that's going to be fun for me. And hopefully I can bring a lot to the fans and also, you know, to the players.
Laura, I ran into Joe at John Lynch's Hall of Fame party.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So Joe was talking about like having people's backs. Joe was like, Mayoko, I'm going to destroy you. I'm going to do, every point you bring up, I'm going to do the counterpoint and I'm going to tell you why you're wrong.
That makes two of us, right?
I mean, the reason why, if you want to go down that avenue already, I was kind of waiting to see if we can have a rapport here first. But the reason why is because I remember, and I have a lockbox of a memory in my brain.
Oh, no, this ought to be good.
Every single miserable thing you wrote about me in my career and then came into the locker room the very next day pretending like you never just said I was the worst player you've ever seen. And Joe just got beat 19 times by the third string defensive end and everybody needs to panic. And then the next day you would come in the locker room and be like, Joe, how was practice yesterday? I'm like, you already know how practice was. You wrote all about it. So it's now my turn to give that back to you. And anything that you say is wrong, I will call you on. And I'm going to tell you how many ums you said every single time you're on camera, how many ands you said, and how many run-on sentences. And like I'm doing currently right now, I'm going to call you on all of that.
That's amazing. See, Laura, he's already like
the referee. You're going to be the referee, Laura.
The counter. I'm going to have an counter. This is going to be, wow. This is amazing.
Could get ugly.
I can't wait for this.
That's ugly for everybody.
Wait, Joe, I want to talk to you for a second about, you were down at the practices with the Chargers and we heard Kyle Shanahan say, because you brought up the coaching thing.
Yeah.
Like you were scoping it out, right? What were you doing? I mean, obviously just around the team and getting prepared for this role too, but how was that side of the experience for you as opposed to, you know, obviously being the player?
It was interesting to say the least. I will say this. I spent a year and a half away from football and the football schedule. And going back day one into that lifestyle, that schedule of football in the building, I was at 4 o'clock looking at my watch being like, are you guys done? This is the longest day of my life. And I lived that for 13 years. And I guess you just kind of get used to it and forgot about it. But it was a long day. It was really cool to be around the game of football again and also see it from the coaching's perspective, not just as a player. I think as a player, a lot of times you're always worried about what you're doing. How can you get better? You know, maybe as an offensive lineman, how can the group get better? But, you know, I'm not thinking about really what the running back's doing. We might have some conversation, but there's one of them right there that I just heard right there when I said that.
Counter.
There's two.
One for Joe.
There is a different way of viewing things from the coaching perspective. They're worried about everything piecing together, and also all in the offensive line room, they're worried about all 15. You know, how can we get these guys better, but also how can we get them to play better as a group? And just a lot of different things you don't think about as a player. So it was eye-opening and cool. You know, when me and Kyle were throwing footballs in the pizza ovens in the off season, he had said anytime I wanted to come up and see that side of it, I was more than welcome, and the opportunity arose that they were going to be down in LA, so I took advantage of it. It was a lot of fun, and it's cool to be around the guys and see a lot of people that I haven't seen in a while.
We might have to get to the bottom of the pizza oven thing, but first off, so when you are there in, what were you at, the Irvine Marriott?
Yep.
Going through everything, and you've spent the last couple of years, right, preparing college prospects for the draft?
Last season.
Okay. So last season you worked with some pretty high level offensive linemen, but now it's not just doing that, it's all the film work and all the monotony and the minutia. So did you enjoy the countless hours of studying the film, or do you like getting on the field and working with kids and getting them to hone their technique and give them the tools that they need to succeed?
Yeah, both. I would say for me, more hands-on. You know, that would be, if I were to ever go down the coaching route, and I found this out just on a smaller level when I was training these kids coming out of college, getting ready for the NFL, was it's a lot easier for me to do and show than it is to explain at this point in my life right now, because I haven't had to be the coach in the film room and try to break it down so they can explain to it or they can understand it. It's a lot more difficult as a player that's played for 13, 14, long time to go immediately to that role. Found myself asking a lot of questions with the coaching staff when I was there of, you know, how do you describe this so they're understanding it? I understand it because I can see what they're trying to get done, but how do I verbalize that to someone that doesn't have the experience of me or the coaching staff that they've seen it a million times? So it was interesting to see their perspective and how they kind of break down film, the examples that they use and show and the cutups they pull to get their point across and to try to get this person to see what they want to get them to get done on the football field and then go out there on the practice field and implement it. I would say I did not really understand how many – you understand because the coaches always complain to you as a player of, like, how many hours are actually at the facility watching. But, I mean, especially the assistant offensive line coaches and the assistant guys that aren't really running the room, they are spending 6 hours just to find 30 minutes of film. I mean, they're breaking down every single front, every single little look. It's really all about just giving the players as much as they can handle and have, and as a player, I don't think it's really understood how much you really should appreciate the efforts of the coaching staff and how much they actually do behind the scenes to get players ready.
I feel like you're gonna like the media side better after seeing the coaching side and all those hours. Okay, we got the fluff out of the way. Now I want to peel back the curtain, because you're obviously friends with a lot of these guys. People want to know, you know, who is this team? Who is this 2021 team? And all we've gotten to see is, the, you know, the preseason, and that doesn't tell you the whole story. So what have you seen from the 2021 49ers? Who do you think this team is?
Well, I think this team right now is like any other team that I've ever been a part of, and any other team that's it's early on in the season. You kind of discover that through this process right now of training camp. What's great about the situation the 49ers in are Kyle's in his fifth season with the squad. Everybody's been there for a while. The core and the structure is there. So you're not trying to figure out from top to bottom. It's really how can we implement the new pieces that we have with this football team, along with the superstars that we already have that understand how we're going to get things done. And then get into week one, week two, week three. And that's going to gradually and organically kind of take shape. What's exciting, but also a little bit misleading from the preseason and training camp is, and I've always thought this when I was playing, was you're not seeing the full end product on the field in the preseason training camp. Very rarely are every single player that's going to be out there in the field taking reps, playing in preseason games all together. I mean, even last night, like looking up front, Trent Williams, Alex Mack not playing on the up. You know, the whole preseason, they're not going to be playing. And so that makes the offensive line look a little bit different. You know, they're kind of shuffling pieces around. And those are two huge pieces for that offensive line. And then, you know, with Raheem not playing and George not playing, I mean, the offense is going to look a lot different from what everybody's seeing here in preseason. That being said, those guys that I all mentioned are going to be huge keys for the identity of the football team going forward. They're guys that are really going to be expected to carry the load offensively and really drive whatever their identity is forward. And if, like you saw last year, if those guys aren't healthy and they're not there, then the team is kind of struggling. So
when you're around the team this last week, were there anybody that like you didn't know too much about that you learned about? I mean, the first guy I want to ask you about, you went to Central Michigan. There's a guy who played left tackle the entire game from Western Michigan, Jalen.
Yeah.
Like, tell me about him. What did you learn about
first? That was the first name that when you asked that question, I thought of just because, A, he was getting all the reps. And so I was like intrigued. You know, what's this kid's story? He's a fifth round pick, Western Michigan. Have an immediate pride because of the Mac connection. And then watching him go through meetings and the way he prepares is a very soft-spoken, very quiet rookie, which for me as an older guy, you always respect those guys that come in and want to learn. And another thing that really struck me is that he was really eager to get into Trent's ear, you know, and listen to what Trent was coaching up and things that he would see. Because you can get so much from coaches, assistant heads, and – but really a lot of that stuff too comes from like the individual development is from your vet. And to see Trent being able to do that with Jalen throughout those 2 days that I was there in practice was really cool to see. You know, he's got a ways to go just seeing, but the stuff like the base, the stuff you can't teach, like his movement skills, the way that he's really able, he's smooth transition from, you know, his kick steps and all the technical stuff that offensive linemen think about is really just kind of something that's natural for him. And you don't have to do too much thinking. And I think he's going to be a really, really key part of the season because, you know, that swing tackle position is up for job this year.
Well, what's interesting is when they drafted him, they were talking about him playing guard. So yeah. Why do you think he's better suited to play tackle, or is he?
I think right now, just watching the film that I saw, because he was only getting reps as a tackle, he looks like a natural tackle because of the movement skills, the stuff that you really can't teach. Guard is much more, you're protected on both sides. You're much more in a phone booth, and you're not having to use as much as athleticism. You have to be a lot more explosive and a lot more powerful out there, and you don't have the ability to use both edges as a tackle. And I think he has the movement skills, he has the base, all that stuff that's going to make him a successful tackle, swing tackle. But I think, like you said, to your point, having the ability to move from there to also inside is going to make you a valuable swing guy, backup, because the more you can do, especially if you're not one of those starting five, the better. I mean, you'd like to have someone like who I played with, Adam Snyder, who was able to play all five positions across the offensive line as your, you know, one of the backups, one of the key guys for your offensive line.
I got to talk about the biggest storyline right now. I got to do it. Ooh, I got to do
it. The kicker is? Is that what we're going to talk about? No.
Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance, obviously there's a lot of excitement around both of those guys and really, you know, what Kyle Shanahan is ultimately going to do. None of us really know how the season's going to play out. We'll just have to wait for that. But just having the behind the scenes look that you do, one thing I've been really curious about is it difficult for players to buy in completely when they don't know exactly who's going to be the leader of their team? How does that play out behind the scenes?
No, I don't think so. I think right now training camp is, it kind of plays out. Well, it's twofold. I've been a part where you've had rookies come in and they're competing for a starting position. And that's what we're in a situation right now. There's a rookie coming in, pushing to be the guy. He was third overall pick. The understanding is that he's going to be the guy, obviously. So it's not a issue of buying in for him. It's more, this situation is, you got to make sure a guy's ready. And I don't care how talented a kid coming out of college is, there's definitely a step up as far as progressions and speed and reading defenses and timing that just takes reps to get used to. And some players, there's two different trains of thought. Is the more reps, the more practice reps, the more film study, the more time you can get around the coaches, the better chance he has for success when he does get in there. And the other train of thought is kind of put him out there and have him learn on the fly. And that's a little bit of a, you know, there's success stories on both sides. So, you know, who's to say what the decision's going to be going forward? I don't personally know. I never got to see that behind the scenes, what their way were, their way they were leaning. But I do know, speaking of Trey, everybody in that building, and I also saw it just the 2 days I was there, and I'm sure you guys have seen it watching practice, like the arm talent is unreal. Some of the things that he just does naturally, especially like working against his body, the mechanics, you know, the speed at which he throws, you know, I think that's one thing that he's going to have to kind of figure out is when to throw it at 100 miles an hour and when to put a little touch in the ball. You saw that last night, you know, one of his picks that he had, kind of gunned it in there a little too quick and got a little high. But those are all just learning things. And, you know, he's got a bright future. But like you said, the question is when does he go? When does he get the keys to the castle? Or is it going to be a progression? Or is it, you know, you don't know. I don't know what way they're leaning. Speaking of the other side, though, Jimmy, everybody's been saying that he's had by far his best camp. I mean, that's not just what everybody's been reporting, it's what they're saying in the building too. We're talking to a lot of different players. You know, he's really got an understanding of the offense that he hadn't had before. And he's really putting in the work and he feels confident. And is that because he's getting pushed in the competition? Maybe. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I think they're both in a great position because Jimmy's playing as good as he ever has. And then Trey is a kid that you want to see succeed, and he's going to succeed because of who he is and the talent that he has. So,
as an analyst for NBC Sports Bay Area, Joe, I mean, you know that Jimmy's going to start pretty high and probably make, you know, kind of gradual improvements throughout the season. Whereas Trey is starting, you know, pretty high too. But you would expect him to just kind of shoot up. I mean, there will be rough spots along the way, but
yeah.
Trey at the end of the year, theoretically, is going to be so much better, comfortable, in tune with things than he is right now. You're shaking your head. Say no or yes?
No, that's an unknown, though. You know, if everything goes according to plan, then yes, because of the talent and what Kyle can do with his legs and just how much more he can add to the offense. But that's also assuming that he understands the timing of routes. I mean, that's a basic concept for quarterbacks, and it takes a while to understand the actual speed and the windows you have to throw into. The windows aren't like what he had at North Dakota State, and so that comes with reps. And my personal feeling is just the limited amount of time that I was around him is he's a kid that's going to work incredibly hard to understand it. And he's going to take coaching and understand when he's not doing it right. as opposed to when he is, and he's going to improve from that. So yes, I think he's going to, but it's an unknown, you know?
Right. And so from my standpoint, I would think that if it's close now, then ultimately Trey would be significantly better at the end of the season, just because his learning curve is such that he's going to get better and better and better. But I guess what you're saying is that's not necessarily the case, or you just don't know how it's going to play out.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, it's just not a, it's not a given that it's going to continue. Obviously every single player, I mean, if that's the case, then every single player you draft high is going to continue to be, and all of a sudden they're going to be a Pro Bowler. And that's not the case. You know, some guys, they don't figure it out for whatever reason, or they have a little bit of negativity. You don't know really how they're going to react until they're in that position. And so that's the thing that the coaches have to figure out, is when is the right time to make the change, or do we even make the change? You know, does Jimmy give us the best ability to win this season, and then Trey just learns and understands the NFL game, and then, you know, we go from there? Or do we start Trey week one and just go with it? Or is there some kind of thing where we work him in gradually until, you know, we feel like he's completely ready? So that is, for me, like, you know, the stuff behind the curtain that the players don't realize and they don't think about, is how it all fits in the team. And, you know, the decisions that Kyle has to make this year is why he is the head coach.
And I get the sense, though, that the way that John Lynch and Kyle have, and Adam Peters and everybody else have constructed the roster, like, there's not, it seemed like from the moment they got in, you know, they weeded out some guys, but ultimately the guys that they kept around aren't guys who are going to be like politicking and talking bad about other guys behind their backs. And I kind of get the sense that there's such trust with that organization that whatever Kyle decides, everybody's just going to roll with it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that is from day one when Kyle and John got there and built that roster, from the first year I was with them to today. They've had that in mind always, and that's always at the forefront, especially with John and Adam and Kyle. The guys that they want to bring in the building have to be bought into not just being the best football player they can be, but being the best teammate they can be. And, you know, here and there, there's going to be some – obviously some discourse and people that are not agreeing with things, and people will raise their voice, and that's any football locker room. But the mindset has to be always team first, and what we can do to, you know, the old saying is the rising tide raises all ships. And so that's the way they believe. And I think that's the way I believe. And it's the mantra of the team. So I don't feel like there will be any kind of blowback one way or the other. Also, I think a lot of people, too, in that building really feel like, you know, they take a lot of ownership in what they do. You know, I feel, you know, Raheem and George and Ayuk and Debo and all those skill guys, the offensive line, you know, they want to be the reasons why. They don't want to rely on one quarterback. So it's almost kind of a feeling of whoever's back there, we're going to be good because we're good.
On that note, you've seen, you know, owners the coaching staff through a lot of changes in your time with the 49ers. What's different about Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch? Because we've talked about this a lot, because there is this camaraderie that's very tangible. When before COVID, when we were actually able to be around the team, you could really get the sense of the camaraderie in that locker room. And I do think that starts at the top with Lynch and Shanahan. Did you experience that when they came in, and how are they different?
Yeah, I think for me, Kyle and John both had a vision of what they wanted to create the roster. We went through a ton of personnel changes his first couple of years. And it was always about the team, getting the right guys that really cared about football. It doesn't hurt that Kyle is one of the most innovative minds offensively. And so guys believe in his system. He has that track record already. And then on top of it, Kyle's really good at relating to players. He keeps the locker room loose. He keeps guys accountable, though, at the same time. It's not just, you know, a fun time. It's a tense time, because you want to always do what your job is, but there's a time to have fun. There's a time for football, which players really respect. They don't want to feel like they're just, the pressure of the world is on them all the time. That's not conducive. And they also don't want to feel like they can do whatever the hell they want, because then that's not good for anybody either. Kyle's really good at creating a good, healthy working environment every single day. But the thing I would be interested to see how this season plays out is because the first 3 years that I was with them until I retired, we were building towards something. So you was always like, we're going to get to the pinnacle. Everybody believed that we were. And then we got to the Super Bowl. And then I left. And not just saying it was I left, but then last year, a lot of things happened with injuries, you know, the COVID year, whatever. And then it went back down to 6-10, I believe, last year. How is that going to be this year? Is that going to come back up? Is everybody going to still see it the same way as like we're building towards something? Or is it just a fluke year? And I think that's where a lot of the leaders in the locker room are going to have to really step up and say, hey, we're still, you know, we might have had a down year last year, but this is still the right structure, the right coaching staff, the right everything. And that's personally my belief. I think this was just a blip in the little building progression. I think they're going to be really good for a long time. But that's also something that's going to have to fall on the players in this training camp and getting into the early part of the year.
Do you almost feel like the 2019 season happened a year or two earlier than was anticipated?
No, I don't think it did, because it was privily.
There's one.
You got two strikes.
Is there a privily, Connor? No, I think probably 3-year arc is typically how it goes. I think what was surprising for me was I knew year one was going to be difficult. It always is. You do so much roster transition, new coaching staff. It's not going to be a good year. But people were positive. People, you know, kept the right mentality. I think year two was surprising for me about how bad it was. I was expecting much more of like an 8-8 competing for a wild card spot that year.
But your quarterback was only played 2 games or whatever.
Yes. I never like to use, you know, the excuses.
He's not an excuse guy, Matt.
It happens. Quarterback was injured. And then year three, we all stayed healthy. And you saw what we could do. You know, we added a bunch of pieces, Bosa through the draft. And then Fred Warner is kind of coming on his own and becoming the player that he was. And so then you see what we were able to do. And then I think last year, what gets lost in the narrative is just how many injuries happened that season. So hopefully they look at it like, hey, it's a blip. And I think they do. They have so many guys that are coming back that are really top players at their position, and not just, you know, in the conference or whatever, but in the league. And, you know, they pair that with Kyle and, you know, everybody that's been there forever. It's going to be, should be an exciting year.
Do we need to ask about the pizza oven?
Yeah, I feel like we kind of do.
What the heck happened? What was that all about?
What was that?
You were like the voice of reason. I could hear you in the background saying, hey, you're going to hit a kid. Like,
well, there was – so we were at his neighbor's house. That was his neighbor's rooftop, and Kyle actually threw that into his – that was his house. It wasn't just a random house that he was throwing footballs at.
And good to know. Good to set the record straight.
How, I mean, also, how like fancy is Kyle that he has a pizza oven? But that's a conversation for another moment. His kids were outside his house. My daughter was out there as well doing a lemonade stand for everybody that was walking to and from the beach. And Kyle being Kyle was just like, I mean, for 5 minutes, he's going about how he's got the best arm. And then he's like, oh, he's just kind of like warming up. He's like, oh, I can hit that. No question. I was like, do it. Everybody's just like egging him on, do it, do it. And then he was, and he's like, hey, tape this. I want to see it. So his buddy got the video. That was the first time he did it, and he hit it. And it was actually really impressive. And then from that moment on, for about 2 days, he didn't stop talking about it. So
the lore of Kyle Shanahan, I feel like just
– And I will say this too. When I got there, so we got there down in Irvine. I went up to see the team. I got there. Within 10 minutes of seeing Kyle, he had brought it up again. He was like, I mean – I should have shown that pizza clip to the team. I think that was a missed opportunity. I should have shown that because it was one of the highlights of my life.
I feel like the team, they're on social media, Kyle. They've probably seen it, right?
Oh, yeah.
I could also see him going, hey, Trey, you know, some of these passes you have to throw with more touch. Like this, the pizza. Okay. Throw.
Yes, just pizza oven thought. One thought in your brain, pizza oven.
That's so good. Joe, this is so fun. I'm excited for a full season of this. You've signed the deal, right? There's no backing out now. You can't leave us.
I've signed the deal. There's always backing out. You can back out of anything in life. So, I mean, and me and the person that I am, I've been known to back out of everything. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, who knows? It's a day-to-day. It's a day-to-day thing. No, I'm joking.
So you're going to be...
I signed a contract and I will be there for the next 15 years of my life. So.
You're stuck with us.
So you'll be at Levi's Stadium for home games and home studio games. In the studio in San Francisco for road games.
Yes. Yes, I will. Looking forward to it. Hopefully I don't sweat through a suit.
You might.
Joe Thomas?
I not might. I will.
The sweat glands like Alex Mack? Is that?
Oh, I sweat.
We don't want to get into that discussion.
I was a guy that in practice and training camp would always weigh in after practice and lose 10 pounds. So
that's not right. That's not fair. Yeah. All of the women listening to this hate you right now.
Well, yeah, then I also put back 10 pounds on throughout the rest of the day. So that's also not healthy. Just football in general is not the healthiest thing to do.
We're going to end this the way we started. So how much weight have you lost since your playing career?
Is that a real question?
Yeah, it is.
That's a personal thing, and I don't want to talk about that.
Really?
Matt, why are you putting me on the spot, man? I'm feeling self-conscious about my weight.
No!
No!
I'm saying...
I'm joking. Look, I just like to see you get uncomfortable.
No. Laura, he's already starting. This is going
to
be...
This is great. I'm just going to sit back here, sip my coffee, and watch you two go to town.
No, so I did get down. I was like 245 and I played it like 310. So what is that? I can't do quick math, but that's what, 65?
Don't ask us to do math on this podcast, by the way. We don't do that.
Yeah,
here.
I believe that's what it was.
I've got a calculator.
I'm 260. So I lost about 50 pounds.
That is so crazy.
I enjoyed the summer a little bit.
Are you running marathons or anything?
No, Peloton.
Peloton.
Okay. I can't.
Oh, that's what you do.
I honestly can't run. My knees are too. It hurts to run. So,
do you feel good? Like, I know being around the football team and you're like in this program all the time and lifting weights and all that. Is that something that you just like naturally do now on your own? Obviously, with Peloton or whatever you do to work out.
I definitely have to keep a regiment, like a workout regimen. It's been a big part of my life, and this is all honesty. I think anybody that played competitive sport or just something as long as I did and was around, it becomes like very much a part of your life. So like I had to start my day working out or else. And then there's days that, especially this summer, I was kind of enjoying myself a little bit where I wasn't doing that as much and as frequently. And all of a sudden it's like amazing how much worse I felt and just mentally as well. So if I get a workout in every day, I feel a lot better. And that's one thing about football that I do miss a ton is the schedule. You become so like used to.
Someone's like telling you where to be when, and you're like, okay, I can do that.
Exactly. And so going from that to all of a sudden, boom, nothing is a little bit of a mind warp. I was going to go with a different word there.
Yeah, I get it.
There are guys like Trent Sherfield is a guy that one of the 49ers personnel guys said that, like, depending on the minute of the day, I can tell you exactly where Trent is going to be in the building.
Yeah.
There are some guys who are just sticklers.
I wasn't to the minute, but I could tell you, like, on a Wednesday at this time is typically where I was doing or where I was at and all that stuff. So I was very much a routine person. So got to get back into a new routine and working out's probably been one of the bigger helpers of me being in a routine. But then as opposed to when I was playing football, I would work out and then I'd have, everything else scheduled out. Now I work out and it's, what am I going to do now? I have nothing to do.
But all this time and room for activities.
But Laura, we will know where Joe's going to be on Sundays.
We do. Yes. We've got it locked in. You've got a schedule on Sundays.
I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
We have these things in TV called commercial breaks. They pay our paychecks, and we really like them. So we're going to get to those in a little bit. But this is really fun. We're excited to have you all season and want to give you a warm welcome to the team. You might even get chocolate chip cookies. I don't know. Matt hasn't even ever gotten chocolate chip cookies, but maybe I'm feeling generous.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I appreciate that. Anything that I can get that Matt has not had, I've always welcome.
September 12th, Sunday, 49ers, Lions. Can't wait.
Week one. Let's go, let's go.
At Big O Tires, you can trust that you're getting a good deal. Now through September 6th, save $100 instantly on select sets of Big O brand tires. Plus, get $50 by mail-in rebate on purchases of $500 or more on your Big O credit card. Big O Tires, the team you trust.
Well, Laura, I don't know if I should be worried or not. Whenever Joe Staley is coming for me.
You should be very worried. Very, very worried. I'm just really excited. I mean, he's not scared to call you out, Matt.
No, he's not. I guess we probably need more of that at NBC Sports Bay Area. People calling me out. Sometimes I get a little bit too comfortable, but
yeah, with the dad, I mean, he's going to count dad jokes along with me. I have full confidence that he'll do that.
And I would be more afraid of a 320-pound Joe Staley or a 240. Like, he's faster now, so. I couldn't have outrun him when he was 320 either. So I just don't have any chance, do I?
Not a single sliver of a chance. But I am, honestly, I'm really excited. I've been so looking forward to this day to kind of let the world know what we've been up to and what we've been planning. And his perspective is going to be critical to our coverage this year. And he's going to be able to provide such insight. What a rare opportunity to be able to get a guy that's A, as experienced as Joe Staley, and B, as close to the team as he still is. He hasn't been out of the league for very long, a year.
Oh, Laura, enough of that stuff. I think it's great that he's so darn funny. He's a great communicator.
That's true, too.
Yeah, forget all this football mumbo jumbo. I just want someone who's going to make me laugh. And he used to do this thing, the Joe Show, where he would go around in the locker room and talk to teammates. And oh, my gosh, it was pretty classic. It was good television. So, excited to have Joe Staley as a teammate. And you really didn't believe me or believe him when he said that I would go up to him and ask him why he was so bad and this and that, did you?
Oh, I totally believe that. That's typical Matt Maiocca reporter style. Why were you so terrible today?
One of my favorite Joe Staley memories was in the 2011 season. The offensive line did not start the season off well at all. And Frank Gore had, two of the lowest output games of his career. And me and just a couple other reporters were in Youngstown, Ohio, where the 49ers were practicing between, I think, his weeks 2 and 3. And Joe, I remember Joe saying, we don't suck. We don't suck. I guarantee you we don't. And it was a great quote. And it was like, oh, we don't know whether they do or not, but that was a great quote. And then the 49ers offensive line just took off and led the team to, this incredible record, division title, home field advantage. Of course, they lost in the NFC Championship game to the Giants. But I always remember that, like him, like promising, like, it's not as bad as it looks. And it certainly wasn't, as they got their act together and played some really good football.
If we have a bad show or a bad 49ers talk podcast, I'm going to use that.
Yeah.
I'll copyright Joe for it, but I'm going to use it.
Yeah. Oh, another round of t-shirts are in the mix.
We don't suck. That would be, I think that one would sell.
Yes. Yeah. It's for all occasions, right?
Yeah. Anything. Yeah. You can apply that to anything.
Hey, keeping up to date on the current San Francisco 49ers, couple of injuries to veteran guys in the game Sunday. Michael Kendricks had a turf toe injury, and that's the same injury that Jaquaski Tart had late last season. He hasn't returned to action, but Michael Kendricks, the 49ers decided to put on injured reserve as a way to create some roster space. They had to get down to the 80 players for this week. So Michael Kendricks goes on season ending IR. And then one guy that they're kind of keeping alive the hopes of him returning, that's Maurice Hurst. He had a high ankle sprain, also, expected to be out more than a month. So they're kind of pumping their brakes a little bit there, because if they keep Mo Hurst on the 53-man roster past August 31st or on August 31st, they could bring him back after just 3 weeks. So those were two, or that was one of the roster moves, Michael Kendricks going on IR. And the 49ers also made some other roster moves on Tuesday. River Craycraft, the wide receiver, spent some time with the 49ers last season. He is waived, as is Corbin Kaufusi, an offensive lineman. And then two guys who are released, Calhoun, the defensive lineman, and Webb, the cornerback. So that brings the 49ers to 81 players with their preseason game looming, the final preseason game of the summer looming against the Las Vegas Raiders. And again,
you're still not used to saying it, are you?
No, I have to kind of, I can't believe I messed up that the Chargers.
We don't suck. We don't suck. Okay?
Right. Yeah. Well, some people might disagree with that.
there is one more roster cut, obviously. So the 24th was when teams have to get it down to 80. And then the 31st is the final, when the final 53 man rosters are due.
Oh, did you say August 31st?
August. Oh, I did. What a big day August 31st is.
You know what else is August 31st? You and me performing in front of a live audience.
Are we performing? Makes me a little bit nervous.
Oh, yeah.
You feel like a stand-up comedian.
Yeah. Do you have your material?
No, I don't.
I'm going to unveil so many dad jokes that I'll be booed off the stage. I wonder if they have a gong on stage to like.
No, we need the, what is it at the Apollo? Did they have the like cane the, where they the, would
Is it the shepherds?
On?
Like the
shepherd's hook.
Yeah.
I'll bring a shepherd's hook.
Yeah. So that's letters87.com is the website, and you can go there. It's going to be great. George Kittle, Brent Jones, Carmen Policy, Dwight Hicks, Eric Wright, Ronnie Lott, Carlton Williamson, and one other man whose name that Dwight Hicks brought up, George Seifert. Hicks called George Seifert basically the defensive equivalent to Bill Walsh. And the Pro Football Hall of Fame announced their seniors nominee, Cliff Branch, and then their coaching nominee. And there's 49 members who vote for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but only a select few, and I'm not one of them, vote for the coaches committee and the seniors committee.
Yeah, I was about to blame you.
Yeah, no, don't blame me on this one. And they picked Dick Vermeil. Fine. Dick Vermeil was a fine coach. But I just don't see how you can pick Dick Vermeil over George Seifert. I mean, George Seifert had a much higher winning percentage, much higher. He had a much better record in the postseason. George Seifert, two Super Bowl victories to one for Dick Vermeil. And he was a defensive coordinator, a great defensive coordinator before he became the head coach. So I don't really understand that one. And also, if we're Don Coryell, who was an offensive genius, and many credit him for being kind of the guy who created the modern NFL passing game in a lot of ways. Don Coryell still isn't in the Hall of Fame as a coach either. So anyway.
So what is explain to all of us the stipulations on that. Will he have another opportunity?
Yeah, it's it's one coach a year, at least for a period of time here. And so it's just one coach a year and then one senior a year. And so, like Roger Craig is in that seniors category. Cliff Branch made it this year. So those guys, Vermeil and Branch, are finalists. And so when we meet to select the class of 2022, those two will automatically go through. And basically, of those 49 people who are voting, if both of those guys are, they need an 80% upvote, which of course, everybody's going to vote for those two guys to get into the Hall of Fame. So, I mean, it's not official, but Dick Vermeil and Cliff Branch will be in the Hall of Fame.
So speaking of the Hall of Fame, yeah, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to go there. This is, you got to dance around these topics with Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance.
Oh boy. Were you really going to,
do is stir the pot. I'm just,
so in your mind, who were you going to put into the Hall of Fame, Jimmy or Trey?
No, neither of them.
Okay. Nate Sudfeld. No.
Nate Sudfeld possibility. No, yeah. I'm not one to declare people Hall of Famers like early on. I know some people are like, this rookie is incredible. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. That's not my That's not my forte. But anyway, I just wanted a way to bring up Trey Lance. And I don't know, why not stir the pot a little bit?
Absolutely.
But we've got part three. We've been doing this four-part series of The Choice that you went and got to talk to so many people in Trey Lance's past, you know, family, friends, coaches, all of that. And to be honest, full disclosure, I have not gotten to hear, this has like been hidden in a secret vault. I have not gotten to hear any of this before it was released. So I'm going to be listening along with all of you.
You know what they say, Laura, loose lips sink ships. And so we do not trust you. You're going to go out there on social media with your Laura Britt and her Britannicas or whatever your fan base is called. And so anyway, here is,
I just got that one.
Yeah. Here is the latest episode of The Choice, Trey Lance, presented by Toyota.
Toyota's national sales event is on. This Labor Day, get $1,000 cash back on 2021 Corolla or get $1,000 cash back on 2021 Camry Hybrid. Toyota, let's go places. Cash back is available through TMNA and must be applied to transaction. Offers end 9/7/21.
About 3 hours west of Minneapolis lies the quiet town of Marshall, Minnesota. A place where Trey Lance and his brother Bryce have always called home.
Marshall's really a tiny town to a lot of cities, but you know, in that area, Marshall's the biggest.
If I would tell anyone from around I'm from Marshall, they would not know what it is.
I was fortunate to just grow up around great people. You know, whether it's coaches, teammates, teachers in school, just was super blessed to be able to grow up in that community.
It's also where his parents, Carlton and Angie Lance, decided to raise a family.
So, first off, how'd you two meet?
We met in college. I transferred into SSU at the time, and I was going to summer school, and Carl was working some basketball camps, make some cash in the summer, and we met that summer. Carl left and traveled the world and played football. I was teaching for 10 years. Then when he stopped playing football and came back to this part of the country, we got married when we were 29, and Trey was born when we were 30.
And it didn't take long for Trey to inherit Dad's love of football.
Thank you, Mommy! I love this. I always wanted to know football.
Trey was little, but he could never sit and watch a football game, even all the way through middle school. The minute, almost probably not even first quarter completed, he wanted to go play. So he'd drag his dad out in the backyard and they would be playing during all of the games.
My dad, you know, having played sports, and it's just always been around us. It's always been kind of part of our family and what we do at home.
My parents, you know, they loved me to death, but they, you know, just weren't sports minded, so they didn't go to games, stuff like that. So it was always my thing to just make sure that I was always there and just kind of had that special bond.
Carlton wasn't the only person who Trey would square off with. His childhood best friend, Jake Hess, provided a worthy adversary.
After middle school or elementary school, we would take the bus back to Trey's house, instantly go back into his backyard and play, and naturally the two of us were on two different teams.
Me and Jake were kind of, you know, the bigger, taller kids or more athletic kids, whatever it was growing up. Us two, you know, were the captains for each team or whatever it was. We were kind of the biggest competitors, and we definitely, you know, got into it a few times. And yeah, in elementary school and middle school growing up, we got to get separated probably a lot more than we should have.
One time in particular stands out.
Our third grade teacher took us in after a recess that got really heated once and sat us down. And our goal both obviously was to play professional sports, as every kid, that's what their dream is. And she sat us down and said, "Stop it, that's enough. Neither of you are playing professional sports. Just knock it off."
Paula Meyer, Trey's third grade teacher, remembers that day clearly.
Every year the boys liked to play football in the fall, and that year was no exception. And every year we had to have talks with the boys about how rough they were playing, and that year was no exception. So I had the boys come in right at the end of recess, I think it was, and we had a little talk about how you can't be playing rough like that. You don't have coaches, you don't have padding, you don't have referees, all of that stuff. And then I said, it's not like any of you are ever going to be professional football players. So It's a statement that, yeah, I've remembered all those years for whatever reason. I don't know. But Trey's eyes were the last eyes I looked into after I had said that. And I was like, ooh, I might regret that one day. And here we are.
Before Trey could be a professional football player, he'd first need to make a reluctant position change, thanks in part to a friend of Carlton's.
Trey had played running back before that. Honestly, I have to give credit to one of my friends. He said, you know what? I said, I'm a coaching Trey. He's playing running back. I said, why don't you play quarterback?
So, like, our first practice one time after school, Carlton says, so who here can play quarterback?
I was like, I don't even know if he can throw the ball or any of that stuff, but, you know, yeah, we'll give him a chance at quarterback.
And naturally, I put my hand up and I look around and nobody else has their hand up.
So who's our backup quarterback? Anybody? Nobody?
Well, as much as I wish we could just have one quarterback, someone else is going to do it. Nobody was raising their hand, and Carlton says, Trey, put your hand up.
Trey, you're backup quarterback. And that was it.
Trey certainly loved the game, but at the time didn't have the work ethic required to be an elite-level player. His mom, Angie, knew he had it in him, though.
I knew that he had a goal to play a Division I football. And so there was a conversation when Trey was heading into ninth grade. I'll never forget it. I was sitting on the floor in his bedroom, and he had just had kind of a tough workout with his dad at the Y, where his dad didn't think that he really was doing much of anything. And I said, is that really something that you were thinking that you would like to do, is to play a Division I sport? Well, yeah. And so it was, you know, Trey, I just have to ask you, you know, is that a wish? Because wishes aren't going to get you anywhere. Is that a dream? Because dreams are fun. You know, they really are. Dreams are a lot of fun. Or is it a goal? Because if it's a goal, Trey, there's going to be definitely a price to pay. There's going to be sacrifices to make. And he did flip a switch. When Trey puts his mind to something, nothing will stop him. And he put his mind to that, and he was all in.
By the time Trey got to Marshall High School, he was already known as a can't-miss player. Head football coach Terry Ballman knew of Trey's skills from a very young age.
I coach all the youth football camps in the summer, and I think the first time I had Trey in camp was probably third grade. Oh, he's going to be a good athlete. We knew that, and his competitiveness stood out right away. Trey, as a seventh and eighth grader, was a running back. Then comes to me going into freshman year that he wants to try quarterback. I said, we'd let you go wherever position you want, and obviously after we saw him throw the football and knew his work habits, we kept him at quarterback.
For me, it was, you know, a situation where I thought I was better than the guy that was playing at the time, so I wanted to give it a shot. My high school coach, thankfully, let me get a shot at it.
Trey was dominating on the JV squad when suddenly he was thrust into the spotlight.
End of his sophomore season, our last regular season game, our senior quarterback dislocated an elbow and we put Trey in.
Young Trey Lance coming in for an injured Thomas Fisher.
He comes in, he looks good, coach runs him on a play, and I look at that play and I'm like, okay, he's nervous. He doesn't realize he's nervous, but he's nervous.
Trey, play action, looking for the slant pattern, and it's tipped and picked off!
Tips off of our guy's hands and interception, and he loses the game.
After the game, he was on the bench and a little depressed, and I put my arm around him not knowing what's going to happen in the future. I said, Trey, your best days are coming. It's going to be great, and he's right back to work the next day. You know, where a lot of kids will take a couple weeks off. He's right back getting better, and of course, the rest is history, as they say.
That experience lit a fire underneath Trey and sparked a legendary work ethic.
Sophomore year, after he got that first start, that next season, he was just grinding.
Jake and the rest of his teammates saw that drive firsthand.
After some summer games, I'd be dead, just laying around wanting to take a break, and he would go in the weight room for 3 hours, and I'm like, you do you, man. Like, you have way more of a drive.
And what a dime by Trey Lance. Trey looking for a bomb, looking for Nick. Clay fires it high. It's a beautiful one. Nick has two steps. He's down to the 15, 10, 5, touchdown.
My dad's biggest thing was filming everything. So he filmed every practice he was at, every game, every tournament, whatever it was. We'd get home, you know, on Sunday night from a tournament in Kansas City or Milwaukee or wherever, and we'd watch the whole thing.
He was a great student, and he got all A's, but Sorry again for ratting you out, Trey, but a lot of the class periods he'd spend the entire time watching film.
It's not the guy who can play at 1,000 miles per minute. It's the guy who can think at 1,000 miles per minute. Just telling him to just be prepared. There's no such thing as being overprepared.
But his athleticism wasn't confined to the gridiron. Trey was also a standout for the Tigers basketball team.
You didn't see a lot of high school players with his size and his physicality that would play the point guard position.
His head coach, Travis Carroll, was amazed by his athleticism.
Definitely caused a lot of problems for the teams that we played against. You could definitely tell that what he was doing on the football field was carrying over onto the basketball floor.
And it was on the hardwood that Trey first developed a reputation as a clutch player.
Well, the most memorable game would be one that we lost.
I will remember that game for the rest of my life.
Trey's sophomore year, four overtime game to go to the state tournament.
Masika strike, trying to ice the game with 5.1 seconds. 1-1 free throw, missed it, rebound to McGrath.
I was told to just stay in the corner and kind of draw a defender away.
Nick up the floor, goes over to Lance.
Even though it happened so fast, the time that the ball hit the rim, I'm like, game over, he bricked it.
Lance fires for the tie to send it to OT.
But then the brick rolled in.
He got it! Oh my goodness!
It dented off the back rim and fell in! We're going to OT on a last second three from Trey Lance!
And I'm like, oh my goodness, we're going to overtime. It was just awesome.
Somehow it sat on the back of the rim, went in.
That was unbelievable.
It was obviously cool at the time.
Down to 4 seconds, strike, stops, he'll pull up, makes it, and that'll end it. Wasika wins in the fourth overtime.
Kind of a sick feeling, knowing that we lost, and season's over, never gonna play with those guys again.
I was too sick just to watch even the state tournament. I learned a lot from it about myself. I was only a sophomore in high school, still learning to compete at the highest level that I possibly could and just be a better teammate, be a better leader in situations like that.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.